Good morning, councilors. The chair calls the second meeting of the ALA Council to order. We will follow the same rules that were approved during the ALA Council 1 meeting. Again, as a courtesy to others, please turn your cell phones off or to silent prompting. If you need to make or take a call, please leave the council area. Your voting record is at your place. You should have an ivory card for this morning's meeting. If you want to speak at this meeting, please go to the microphone, wait for recognition, then give your name and indicate if you are a division counselor, a chapter counselor, or a counselor at large, or a roundtable counselor. You will be asked to raise one of your hands for all votes that are not adopted by general consent. Only if the vote seems close will I call for a standing vote. If you must leave before adjournment, please take your card to Lois Ann Gregory Wood over at the projectionist table. A quorum for a council meeting is 75 councilors. I have been advised that we have well over 75 councilors present, and therefore we have a quorum. We have a few people who are going to speak very briefly. Pam, are you here?
I'm Pam Klipsch, the Missouri Chapter Counselor, and I just want to turn around so I can see most of you. Just very, very briefly, I just wanted to convey to you the very great thanks and gratitude of the librarians of Joplin for everything that ALA and Chapter Relations and Council has done to get the message out. It has made a tremendous difference, and they never expected it. They said to me, we never thought that anybody at ALA or outside of the state of Missouri would care what happened in a little town down in the southern end of the state. But now they know their library family is a whole lot bigger than they ever thought it was. And they are very, very, very grateful. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Pam. Microphone number 5, Pat Hogan.
Pat Hogan, Executive Board. And in these difficult times, it's really wonderful when we can share some good news. And one of our own, Elizabeth Ridler, has been recognized for her steady work in support of ADA and accessibility. She has been awarded ASCLA's Kathleen Bourdon Service Award. So let's give her a big round of applause for all her work. Elizabeth.
And as a follow-up to an item that occurred yesterday, some very brief discussion. I wanted to let you know that the TCE, the Traditional Cultural Expressions Task Force, will be forwarding their document to the Diversity Council for further development in cooperation with appropriate committees, divisions, and groups. Thank you, Maggie. And thank you, June Pinnell Stevens. All right, we're going to move forward now with the agenda. The agenda ALA Council document number 8.6 revised, 5.08 p.m., and all other documents issued since the last council meeting are available at the council document pickup station in this room. I would suggest that those of you who are on the agenda and are going to be reporting, please come up on the stage and sit beside Keith Beal shortly before your presentation. This will enable us to move through the agenda more effectively. Again, thank you. Under the 24-hour rule, we have received the following resolutions to add under new business. ALA Council Document Number 50, Resolution on the Revised Guidelines for the ALA Intern Program. Do you have any other new business to add? Seeing no one at the microphone, the chair declares the agenda adopted. The chair directs you to ALA Council Document Number 17.1 and calls upon Councilor John A. Moorman, Chair of the Policy Monitoring Committee, to present his report. John.
Thank you. You have in front of you Council Document 17.1. As a reminder to new councilors, one of the charges of the Policy Monitoring Committee is to take actions from Council and recommend to Council the appropriate placement in the policy manual. you have before you today two action items. Number one, based on ALA Council Document 36.2, ALA Strategic Plan 2011 through 2015, submitted by the ALA Executive Board and adopted as amended by the ALA Council at the 2010 ALA Annual Conference, the PMC recommends the insertion of Policy 1.3.1 and the revision of Policies 1.4 and 1.5 into the ALA Policy Manual as follows. And you have that document in front of you. Are there any questions on this request for action?
Is there any discussion? Seeing no one at a microphone, will all of those in favor of item number one, which you see on the screen, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes.
Item number two.
We want to mark the ballot. Just give us a second. Mark your ballot, Council Document Number 17.1, Item 1.
Item number 2, based on ALA Council Document 35, clarification within job listings as to the presence or absence of domestic partner benefits, Midwinter Meeting 2011, submitted by ALA Councilors Peter Hepburn and Larry Romans, and adopted as amended by the ALA Council. PMC removes the following changes in the ALA Policy Manual. And you can see the text that is current and the proposed text as a part of item two. I would like to bring to your attention, in the second paragraph of the new text, spell check got me again. And I would like to correct the term job announces to job announcements. Any questions?
Is there any discussion? Seeing no one at the microphone, we are ready to vote on item number two of the Policy Monitoring Committee report. All those in favor, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes for Council Document 17.1, item number two. Let's wait for the mark. Mark your ballot. Okay, CD 17.1, item 2. John, you're going to continue.
As information items, just note there's some housekeeping work that the committee has done, and I'll talk about the ALA Policy Manual Revision Task Force in a minute. And again, under pending items, the ambiguity of the term headquarters remains on the committee's agenda. The committee will take up this item once Constitution and Bylaws Committee has completed its review. And in concluding my report, I want to again express our deep appreciation to Lois Ann Gregory Wood. Her intimate knowledge of ALA, its history and procedures, keeps this committee from wandering in the wilderness. And that's the end of the Policy Monitoring Committee report.
Thank you, John.
And what is not on your agenda, but is now a brief update on the Policy Manual Revision Task Force, which I also chair. This came about as a result of a council expression of a need for us to look at the policy manual in detail and to recommend such changes to the manual as are necessary to bring it up to date, to make it easier for us to search in the new electronic environment, to take out outdated policy and the like. This task force has been meeting since last annual conference. It is a two-year task force. We met the other day and we'll be meeting again today. We are making good progress on our efforts to bring to you by annual conference next year a complete report of this committee with a new proposed policy manual. Are there any questions?
Is there any discussion? In that case, let's express our deep gratitude for taking on that policy manual review.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom, and thanks to your team. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 25.1 and call upon Councillor Tom Wilding, Chair of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee, to report. Tom.
Thank you, and good morning. I bring you another scintillating report from the Constitution and Bylaws Committee. I like to do this in the morning to wake you up, just in case you need it and you haven't had your coffee. The Constitution and Bylaws Committee brings two action items forward. The first one is the last item from the Norman Horrocks Task Force to sort of clean up the bylaws. And I told you at midwinter that I would be polling counsel on the listserv to get some input concerning exactly how the election process for councilors should work. And you did give me input, and I appreciate it very much. The committee appreciates it very much. And as a result of that, we are recommending that there be a change in the filling of a vacancy created by a candidate who withdraws during the election process. And when we went to do this in Article 3 was a fairly long paragraph that actually had several points in it. So action item one from the committee is resolve that ALA bylaws Article 3, Section 5 be replaced in its entirety by the following. Article 3, Section 5, Section A, or subsection A, for each office, the candidate receiving the largest number of votes shall be elected and shall be so reported to the association by the Committee on Election. In the case of a tie vote, the successful candidate shall be determined by lot conducted by the Committee on Election. Subsection B, in the event that a candidate for election as a councillor at large withdraws from or is unable to continue his or her candidacy in the period between the distribution of ballots and the reporting of election results, the votes for that candidate shall be ignored. The impact of that is whoever is next moves up and is then elected.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no one at the microphone, we will proceed with the vote. All of those in favor of item one from Council Document Number 25, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Please mark your ballot, CD number 25.1, dash item 1.
Action item number 2 concerns votes at virtual membership meetings. We were asked to review the bylaws to see how we could incorporate the possibility of voting at virtual membership meetings. We had a hard time. We put it one place. It didn't make sense. We put it another place. It didn't make sense. I have to thank Ellie, who sat with me yesterday afternoon trying to figure out where could we put this that it would make sense. We ended up with the action item here, number two, and there is a typo in the first line that was pointed out to me after this got sent in. That if you would cross the words to include out in the resolved line, it isn't to include to read, it's to read. So resolve that ALA bylaws Article 2, Section 4 be revised so as to read as follows. The underlined sentence is the addition. Bylaw Article 2, Section 4, membership meetings. A membership meeting consists of the voting members of the association with authority to act as set out in Article 6, Section 4, Subsection A, and 4, Subsection C of the Constitution. A membership meeting shall be held during the annual conference and at such other times as may be set by the Executive Board, Council, or by membership petition as provided for in Article 2, Section 2 of the bylaws. Membership meetings may be held virtually, and the Executive Board shall establish the procedures for such meetings. And we assume that in this setting of those procedures is also the setting of the voting mechanism. The quorum is covered in another part of the bylaws, so the quorum is already set for what a membership meeting can be. And we think that this will fix it. Ellie and I came to agreement on that this fixes it. So.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Ellie. We are now open for discussion. Microphone number 7.
Michael Golrick, Counselor at Large. Have you run this by legal counsel? Because my recollection was, at least when I was on the executive board, because the association is governed by the laws of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in which it was incorporated, that there were limitations in Massachusetts law about what actions were able to be taken when people are not physically present at a meeting.
To my knowledge, it has not been run by legal counsel unless it happened sometime between yesterday afternoon and this morning.
With your permission, Paula Gettert, our legal counsel, is here, and I'd like to call on her and have her respond to your question, Michael.
Thank you.
Microphone number 3.
First of all, Massachusetts does not currently limit the ability of a organization to have a members' meeting, which permits all members to hear and communicate with each other at the same time. These laws are changing very rapidly as technology advances, though. That's why I love the way this is worded, because it says the executive board shall establish procedures for such meetings that permits the executive board to keep on top of current developments in the law and make sure that at all times any such meeting would comply with law.
Microphone number 6.
Mary Niblo, counselor at large. This is just an inquiry that I have, because I wanted to ask you, why is it that the executive, and some of the rationale that you use as to why the executive board will establish the procedures for such meetings. You know, that's in that underlying section. When we do know that any policy is made, usually comes through council, and council establishes policy, and it's not the executive board. Not that I have anything against the executive board, but I'm just curious why we're going this route.
Would you like to respond, Tom?
Sure. It's procedural rather than policy. The policy is to allow the meeting to happen, and the operational part of the mechanics of the meeting and how that is done, once we have the policy that there is a limit on the quorum, and that the virtual meeting can happen, the mechanism for voting and how the meeting is held and all that sort of stuff is really not policy stuff. It's procedural stuff, which we generally allow the executive board to do.
Microphone number 3.
Barbara Miller, counselor at large. I just have a question of interpretation. By the wording in this sentence, does this mean that each time a meeting is held virtually, the executive board will establish procedures for that meeting so that the next meeting that was created, it would be different procedures?
Tom, would you like to address the question?
It allows for that. It doesn't. I mean, they may well say we'll use the same procedures as the last time. But as our attorney pointed out, if things change and procedures have to change to keep up with the current situation, then the executive board can change that without having to wait for the next council meeting and going that way. So it allows for it, but it doesn't say that it's going to change every time. It just allows for changes to happen because of situations or circumstances.
Okay. Well,
or technology.
Okay. Well, my problem with it is just that in the past, in other groups that I've been in, where there's voting procedures, we felt that it was very important to have consistent procedures from one group to the next. In other words, there'd be an executive board, then there'd be another executive board, and so on, because sometimes the rules could be adjusted for political reasons or could be interpreted by the large group, that it was done for political reasons. And I was a little bit disturbed that the exact rules maybe the first time we have a meeting could be established. That was my only problem with that.
Microphone number three.
Larry Romans, counselor at large. I think this is not a procedural question, but a policy question, because in fact, what the executive board decides could well determine whether there will be an official meeting or not. And that to me is a pretty important policy question. Also, it is unclear from this statement whether the executive board shall establish the procedures just for virtual meetings or for face-to-face meetings. But I still don't like the notion that the executive board gets to establish the procedures. I don't think that the changes are going to be so radical from year to year that the council can't deal with this situation.
Tom, do you want to clarify whether this is addressing specifically virtual meetings?
The intent of the language was the phrase "for such meetings" refers to the earlier part of the sentence, which is that meetings may be held virtually. So it's virtual meetings is what is being referred to.
Is there further discussion? Seeing no one at the microphone, we will proceed with the vote. All those in favor of Council Document Number 25, Item 25.1, Item Number 2, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, Council Document Number 25.1, Item 2.
Our third thing is not an action item. It's an explanation. We pursued the subject of unexcused absences by councilors at large because the subject came up, I believe, a couple of times, not just once, during my surveying of people about council elections and things like that. And so the committee looked at it because, in fact, our bylaws do not really address removal of a councillor or, for that matter, an officer. And without our bylaws addressing it, it reverts back to whatever Sturgis says. And for Sturgis, the voters of the person get to remove the person, and that seems a kind of awkward situation. So we looked at it. After a fairly lengthy discussion in the committee, we decided not to do anything about it, but to toss it back to council or the executive board to direct us at some point in the future to do something about it. So we have left the dog lying, and he will sleep until you wake him up. So that's where that is. And by the way, we in no way intended to throw aspersions on anybody who shows up, is silent, votes, thinks, and all that sort of stuff. So we appreciate your coming. We appreciate your being here. We appreciate your thinking. And if you feel like it, we appreciate your sharing your opinions with us. And finally, I would like to just say thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to chair this committee for the last 3 years. I've enjoyed this. I've enjoyed being able to stand up here and wake you up in the mornings. And I hope I will have such an opportunity again in the future. And I very much thank the committee members who worked with me over these years.
We thank Tom, and we thank his committee members as well. Yes. Microphone number three.
Larry Romans, counselor at large. This also happens to be the first anniversary of Tom and Stephen's wedding. And given that in New York they've just passed marriage equality, I think we should give them a hand.
We congratulate them on their first anniversary. Stop teasing me. I now... Excuse me. Let me look. Okay. Microphone number 7.
Jen Pickle, Counselor at Large. I just had a question about the removal of counselors. I wondered if in the bylaws there's something about being able to resign, because that would kind of cover that. I think sometimes when you're elected, things may change and you may not be able to attend. And I just wondered if that was in there currently or not.
It is covered in our parliamentary procedure that we follow, Sturgis. Okay, I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 27.2 and call upon Jim Reddick, Chair of the Committee on Organization, to present his report. Jim.
Good morning, and thank you to Mr. Wilding for waking you up for me. We have three actions from COO. I don't think any of them are problematic in any way. The first is a revision of the ALA Children Book Joint Committee, a change in its charge. And just to sum up what the difference is, the first one cites they're there to fix problems. The second one emphasizes creating relationship. I personally think this is an improvement. So our first action item is resolved that the charge of the Joint American Library Association Children's Book Council Committee be revised to, quote, to foster communication and collaborate on mutual opportunities, concerns, and issues regarding the content, format, distribution, and promotion of materials for children and young adults, including but not limited to the creation and dissemination of appropriate resources as they relate to both the library and publishing communities, end of quote.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no one at the microphone, we will proceed with the vote. All those in favor of item number 1 of Council Document 27.2, which Jim just read to us, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Mark your document, CD number 27.2, item number 1.
The second item is the creation of a new roundtable. Group of members who have proposed the creation of the Games and Gaming Roundtable have acquired the necessary signatures in compliance with the bylaws, and we have their statement of purpose there on page 2 of the COO report. And COO moves resolved that Council approve creation of the Games and Gaming Roundtable.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no one at the microphone, we will proceed with the vote. All those in favor of the action, item number 2, just read by Jim, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD number 27.2, item number 2.
The third action item has a bit more complexity to it. We know that a lot of experimentation has been going on throughout the association by committees and boards on how they meet and how they integrate technologies for distance participation into face-to-face meetings. There are some interesting questions and issues about this. And this is an attempt to get some baseline data on its success and its cost for council and ALA level committees. COO did a survey of the chairs of those committees this spring to determine openness towards meetings in which some members would not be physically present but others would be. So what COO's proposing here in the third action item is a series of steps to be produced and begun by the executive director to set up a 2-year pilot study of how this can work and what it would cost by selecting certain unspecified number of committees from among the ALA and council committees to hold meetings in this way at the annual conference and midwinter meeting. The reason the number is unspecified is there's work to be done by BARC and management to determine what the cost would be and what the budget can bear and how many committees could be accommodated in that. We realize that some members will think that this is catching up with a horse that left the barn long ago. We applaud all that experimentation that's going on, but we really don't have any data about what it's costing, nor anything other than anecdotal evidence about its success. So this is an effort to produce some data which will be useful in planning for how the organization can work and meet in the future. So KU moves resolved that Council directs the ALA Executive Director and BARC to implement steps A through F in action item 3 immediately above. And I hope I don't have to read them all.
You should have the document before you. Unless you request it, we will not read all of the items. Microphone, is there any discussion? And there is. Microphone number 3.
Marilyn Hinshaw, Councillor at Large. I know that you are thinking about how this would be implemented. I just wanted to speak a little from my experience. It certainly depends on what is the committee's charge to participate electronically. For instance, I was the chair of a nominating committee that totally did its work. Well, actually, it was an awards committee. We were choosing someone to receive a scholarship. We did that work totally electronically. However, I've also been on BARC, the Budget Analysis and Review Committee, and I can't imagine the situation in which that committee would be able to do all of its business electronically. Nevertheless, I support the idea that we would have electronic participation, but carefully assess those committees that actually can support this.
Is there further discussion? Microphone number 5.
Mario Gonzalez, Councillor at Large and Chair of BARC. Jim, I have a question about B. Are you indicating that we just select the number of committees that we do the pilot on as a test? Is that what the X stands for?
Yeah, we didn't want to specify a number because we don't know what the association will be able to finance for this trial.
Okay, thank you.
We'll count on BARC and management to fill in the X.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing no one at the microphone, we will proceed with the vote. All those in favor of Council Document Number 27.2, Item 3, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD Number 27.2, Item Number 3.
KU has one information item. It came to us as an action item from ALSC about a one-word change in their charge. Because they followed their bylaws practices and their members approved this in the spring election, KU gives this to you as information and didn't think that anything further needed to be done that ALSC had not already done for itself. Thank you, and I want to thank the Committee on Organization for continuing to look forward and not just react to things that come our way.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. The chair directs you to ALA Council Document Number 45 and again calls upon Jim Reddy, chair of the Council Effectiveness Task Force, to present his report. Jim.
Thank you. I hope you're still awake. I want to thank my colleagues, some of whom are here in the chamber, who served on the Council Effectiveness Task Force, for being willing to speculate, think freely. I'll avoid all the cliches about thinking outside the box, et cetera. And I want to thank Joanne Kempf and Lois Ann Gregory Wood for the excellent staff support they gave us of the typical level that we've come to expect of them and receive. And I want to thank President Stevens for putting together a really good group of people to work on this. The main issue that the task force identified is that in its judgment, council is an asset which the association can derive greater value from. It's an incredible cross-section of the membership, not a perfect reflection of that. We know school librarians are underrepresented among council's membership, but it's also important that every one of you here was elected by members to represent their interests. The structure of council in various ways echoes, though doesn't replicate exactly, ALA's overall structure. Council proceedings we concluded, tend to be resolution and committee report driven. The task force sees potential for council to assume a strategic leadership role that is already inherent in the council mission, just not exercised as vigorously as we think it can be. Council, after all, approves the ALA strategic plan every 5 years, and it is a brain trust that can help further progress on that strategic plan and its goals and help assess that progress. It can also identify issues that the membership broadly wants ALA to provide leadership on. With some changes, we believe that Council can realize its potential for proactive leadership of ALA's 60,000 personal members. Among the many recommendations from the task force, there are three for action by Council. These focus on effectiveness, not efficiency. These two things are not mutually exclusive, but what we were looking for is how can Council do its work better, not how can it do it faster, which is something in recent years it's proved it can do. Some of the recommendations can easily be implemented by the Governance Office and the Executive Committee of the Executive Board as they set agendas and do other procedural things within their province. And before presenting the three action items, I'll just give you an overview of the major points. The first one is communication. We think that there are additional opportunities for ALA and council committees throughout the year to keep council informed about their work and the issues that they may bring to council for action, and at the same time make this information more widely available to the membership at large. Many of these opportunities, we think, are among the tools that are in ALA Connect. I know that sometime in the past year there was a suggestion on the council listserv that it transfer its conversations to ALA Connect. Since that time, ALA Connect has continued to vary what it offers members. There are more tools, it's a more vigorous forum for communication with members, and we think that Connect offers a lot of opportunities to literally connect with members, and we recommend a broad experimentation by Council with the tools Connect offers. There would be opportunities here, for example, for members to communicate more effectively than they can now to Council about what their concerns are, what issues they think Council should be debating and acting on. And it will lead, we think, to greater transparency. Time is another issue. We've looked at opportunities to allow more time for Council and its agendas to address these strategic issues and be more proactive. One of the recommendations that Council that we put forward is that Council adhere to its policy that it not get reports from committees that don't have action items. There is also within Council procedures in the agenda approval at each meeting to override this if there is good reason to. We looked as well at the resolutions process, and there'll be an action item relating to this. In keeping with the opportunities we see for Council to play a more strategic role, we recommend that the ALA strategic plan be a Council document for every Council meeting so that that can serve as a touchstone for what it is that Council should be focused on in its work. We also are aware of the folklore that Council spends too much time on issues that are not priorities to the membership. And so the task force has an action item that we think will help dispel that notion. What it does is it simply adds a criterion for authors of resolutions to fulfill. It does not transfer any power of judging the relevance of a resolution to any group other than the council as a whole. We looked at the relationship of council to the membership, and in addition to capitalizing on the opportunities ALA Connect offers, the task force has an action item that would, in effect, combine the Council Executive Board membership sessions and membership meetings at the annual conference. And this proposal preserves the opportunities for members to bring forth resolutions and for the membership at a membership meeting to act on them. We see this as an opportunity to improve sharing of information and giving members greater opportunity to interact with membership in those face-to-face occasions. We see opportunities for a more strategic role for Council. The task force recommend that Council agendas accommodate opportunities for council to engage in discussion of a mega issue that is identified for each of those discussions. Ideally, this would happen at Council 2 before Council 3 distracts people with the need to get to airports and such. Again, experimentation is going to be important. Council will have to experiment with its time management, its agendas, and order of business. There's a final overarching recommendation, and that is that management and BARC seek a way to fund a process for Council to conduct a self-assessment of its effectiveness. This would be a one-time effort involving a third-party disinterested facilitator. Nobody knows Council better than the members of Council. Nevertheless, it can be hard to take a clear look in the mirror and assess one's performance. And we think this would give Council that opportunity.
So shall I move to the... Is there any discussion on the recommendations? Microphone number 7.
June Pinnell Stevens, Counselor at Large. The first item appears to be that the Freedom to Read Foundation shall no longer give a report to the council, and I object to this recommendation. As a person who served as president of the foundation for 3 years and treasurer for another 3 and board member for another 2, that's 8 if you're counting, I see a great value in having a report to council from the foundation. It is the legal defense arm of our association, and its charter had required it to report to council every conference, and annual and midwinter. They meet and are finished before the conference begins and can easily make its report on the Council 1 rather than carrying over to Council 2. There are enough members of Council elected from the intellectual freedom group of followers that there will be an objection filed every time. You can count on it, and it would end up wasting more time than simply allowing the president to give a simple report. It's information that this group needs to hear, because a problem that's occurring in one state will certainly pop up in neighboring states or any state in the union sooner or later. It's information you need. There are processes involved in the cases that the foundation takes on that they need to understand. And in summation, I strongly object to this recommendation. Thank you.
Microphone number 7.
Yes, Loida Garcia Fibo, Councilor at Large and also Chair of the Committee on Membership Meetings. I would like to speak about the section number 5, about the membership meetings and information sections. We were in communication with Jim Reddick, and the committee agreed with recommendations on this report on that specific matter. Thanks.
Microphone number 7.
Carrie Gardner at Large. I'd like to second everything June P.S. said.
Microphone number 6.
And I'll third everything that June Pinnell Stevens said. I think it's critical, and it does address our priorities of intellectual freedom. And I think that it's important that we hear from the Freedom to Read Foundation. Thank you.
Microphone number 3.
Barbara Jenko, Counselor at Large. Building on what the previous counselors, especially June Pinnell Stevens, said, perhaps this report from the Freedom to Read Foundation is so important that it belongs at the membership or at the information meeting. If it really has incredible value, and I think most of us here believe it does, maybe it deserves a broader audience.
Microphone number 6.
Mary Biblow, Counselor at Large. If we're talking about the effectiveness of council, I think we should start with number 1. That is trying to give the counselors their information before they come here. Either having the committees have their reports on the internet a week before council is to me, because I've had people who have sat in the audience say they don't see how we do it. You give us the documents and we're supposed to read them while someone is speaking or beforehand in order to try and make a real substantive answer. When we had snail mail years ago, we would receive these documents at least a week before council met. And we would study them, and we would come in and have some real fruitful discussions. But if I'm going to get a document, as long as this or any other one, hot off the press, and to sit up here and discuss it thoroughly and make real, I would think, analyze it and be able to analyze it and formulate ideas to come up to this microphone and try to make something that's worthwhile for council to discuss and to participate in. I think we need to talk about that. And you didn't cover that in the report at all.
Microphone number 7.
June Pinnell Stevens, Councillor at Large. One thing I neglected to mention when I spoke earlier is that this is the first time that OIF or the foundation has learned of this recommendation. In other words, they were blindsided. Thank you.
Microphone number 7.
Pam Hickson Stevenson, Ohio Chapter Councillor. I thought maybe it was just me, but there are several of us sitting here trying to figure out which recommendations in this document are the three that require council action. So it would be helpful if we could have that identified for us. Thank you.
Jim, do you want to address that?
The recommendations are on page 8, recommendation 3.2, page 11, recommendation 5.1, and page 13, recommendation 6.4. Those are for council action because they all affect ALA policy.
I'd like to interject a comment. It might be a little easier for us if we take them one at a time. So, Jim, we would need to display recommendation 3.2 on the screen. Meanwhile, we will go to microphone number 5 while we wait for that to occur.
Mario Gonzalez, Councillor at Large. Madam President, I came up before you made that statement, so I have a general statement on the whole report. I want to thank Jim and the committee and the task force for putting this very valuable document together. I would also like to say that this could be one of the first mega issues that council can discuss, because there are so many implications on this report for us to make. I feel uncomfortable making a decision right now on any or all of these recommendations, because I think we need to discuss all of these as a full body so we can really understand the implications involved here.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's move to the action items. Let me call your attention to page 8.
Jim, one moment. Let's go to microphone number 4.
Sue Cam, Councillor at Large. Is a motion to postpone or to lay on the table this document, does that require a motion form, or is that considered procedural?
We can postpone temporarily. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, microphone number 3.
Just a point of information.
Microphone number 3.
Marilyn Hinshaw, Councillor at Large. Just a point of information. We don't have the same pagination you do, Jim. Page 6 is where I find recommendation 3.2.
Thank you. I guess I'm using the version that I used with the executive board earlier this week. I wasn't aware of that. Thanks for the correction.
Okay, let's be clear. We are looking at recommendation 3.2. It appears on the screen. And the implementation that requires council action is resolved that the ALA council amends provision number 6. Is that correct? I'm looking at this, Jim, and I want to make sure I'm clear. Are we looking at resolve that the ALA council amends provision number 6 of the content section of the policy 5.3 to state resolutions should clearly support ALA's strategic plan as well as its mission and or its core values, and add to the process provisions of policy 5.3 the statement that a supplemental explanation consisting of one or more expository paragraphs should accompany every resolution, clearly stating how the resolution supports ALA's strategic plan as well as its mission and or its core values. The supplementary explanation is not a part of the resolution proper. All right. Those at the microphone should be speaking to this motion. Or this action. Microphone number 6.
Pam Klipsch, Missouri Chapter Counselor. I'm sorry, Roberta, but I have a procedural question I want to ask. These are the three action items we're pulling out of this report, so we vote specifically on those. Mm-hmm. But what happens with all the other recommendations in the report? If this report is accepted, do they automatically go forward without any further discussion?
No, they do not automatically go forward. They were recommendations to be explored.
Okay.
So we can have further discussion.
Absolutely. Okay, fine. Thank you.
Okay. Right now we have an action before you. However, we can go back and talk further about the report. Okay, microphone number 7, I believe you're next.
Now, June Pinnell Stevens, Council at Large, and I speak in opposition to this item. It occurs to me that strategic plan occurs every 5 years in sort of an ongoing process, and it's a long, drawn-out sort of procedure. If members of this body feel that it's important to make a change in that strategic direction partway through that plan, if this item passes, it would inhibit our ability to make motions from the floor or to this body to make a change should something arise in the meantime that is in conflict with the plan. I'm uneasy with that, being restricted in any way for making a motion that might not be consistent with the plan and mission so far. Thank you.
Microphone number 6.
Mary Bibelot, Counselor at Large. I move that we table this discussion until midwinter 2012. So that we would have full time to read and discuss and look at the ramifications that is recommended in this document.
We are at this point dealing with this particular item, but we can go ahead and table the entire document and provide more time for the digestion of the information that's contained. We need to have a second, and then we would take a vote on this. So I need to have a second. We have a second. So we have a motion to table for temporarily until midwinter. I understand that. Okay. We are moving to postpone until the midwinter meeting this document. Giving you the opportunity for discussion at midwinter and for thorough digestion of what's contained within it in between. Is there any discussion on this motion?
If you're a motion to be tabled, there shouldn't be any discussion on it. You should just vote it up or vote it down.
The motion to table does not identify time, so this has to be a motion to postpone. So let me clarify, Mary, are you moving to postpone or to table? Table is indefinite.
No, I want to table it until midwinter 2012.
Okay. If you have a time attached and you had said ALA midwinter, the motion to table is incorrect. That's permanent.
That means postpone it then.
Okay, thank you. So we have a motion to postpone this document, discussion of this document, give you time to review it and to bring it back at the midwinter meeting. And we have a second? All right. Is there discussion? Microphone number 7.
Kathleen Kern, RUSA counselor. I think postponing until midwinter is a great example of a lack of council effectiveness. I would, however, appreciate postponing this until overnight to actually have time to take a few minutes and read the document outside of council.
Okay. Okay, you did not move an amendment. You can move to amend.
I'll move to amend to postpone until overnight rather than midwinter.
Okay, do we have a second? Okay. Okay, so now we have a motion to postpone discussion of council document number 45 until council 3 convenes. Do we have discussion on this amendment? All those in favor of the amendment to postpone discussion on council document number 45 until council 3, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries to postpone discussion of council document number 45 until council 3. We will see each other tomorrow on this.
I'll be back, and I want to thank the three of you who sent corrections to typos about 10, 12 days ago when this was sent out first.
Thank you, Jim, and we will see you again soon. The chair now directs you to ALA Council document number 22.1 and calls upon Kenton L. Oliver, president of the Freedom to Read Foundation, to present his report.
Madam President and Council, thank you for letting me be here this morning. We have some exciting news that I'll get to in a minute, and I think it'll be well worth your while to listen to this report today. Quickly moving through the document, the Freedom to Read Foundation is working through a strategic plan, planning process of its own right now, and we're focusing on expanding membership that will make it possible for us to have a financial base, not to only join in other cases with amicus processes, but also to be lead litigants in cases that we see important to the library, publishing, and bookselling community. So again, I will give my annual. If we have a new membership brochure, it's on the back table. Everybody in this room, we would hope, would be a member of the Freedom to Read Foundation, and I would encourage you to fill out an application and join us as we defend your First Amendment rights. Under defending the freedom to read, I'm not going to go through all of the cases here, but I think there are two worth pointing out, and one specifically that's exciting to talk about this morning. The Foundation does monitor the Sarah Bradburn and North Central Library District case that is going on in Washington State. The Foundation is not a part of that litigation. However, we do continue to monitor it because of implications with the Children's Internet Protection Act and the findings in that case. So we do continue to watch that. However, I am excited to report that there is a typo on page 2. In regard to your report, where it says, finally, like many other First Amendment organizations, we are anxiously waiting the Supreme Court's decision in Brown versus Entertainment Merchants. I am pleased to report that minutes ago the Supreme Court struck down this particular case. This case had serious implications for content, and we felt that it was extremely broad. And I would like to take this opportunity to read a quick summary of the case that will just take a minute, because I think it's significant in regard to what most of us do on a daily basis in trying to provide free access to information in our libraries. In a quick summary, it was held that the Act does not comport with the First Amendment. Video games qualify for First Amendment protection, like protected books, plays, and movies. They communicate ideas through familiar literary devices and features distinctive to the medium, and the basic principle of free speech, the basic principles of free speech do not vary. This is a very important case for the American Library Association and the Freedom to Read Foundation, and we're excited to report the good news on this particular case this morning. In developing issues, the Foundation continues to review developing issues in regard to libraries and the First Amendment. And one of the items that we are continuing to monitor is in the area of e-books. And we are concerned about contractual obligations with e-books, and specifically in regard to privacy, customer and patron privacy. And we are watching that very closely. We are also monitoring the different task force in ALA and their findings in regard to e-books. I'd like to quickly point out that Chris Finan was our Roll of Honor winner this year, and it points out not only what a great job he has done in the past with the First Amendment, but the diversity of the membership of the Freedom to Read Foundation. It talks about Chris there. He is involved with Booksellers Association, and it shows that we not only have librarians and publishers, but booksellers as part of our association. Audrey Barbikoff is here with us as part of the Connable process, where we provide an opportunity for one person interested in intellectual freedom and the First Amendment to attend their first ALA conference. And those are the primary things that I wanted to mention today. I do want to point out that we have great support with the Office of Intellectual Freedom and the Freedom to Read Foundation support staff, specifically Barbara Jones, Jonathan Kelly, and Deborah Caldwell-Jones. So thank you all very much. Are there questions or comments?
Microphone number 4.
Marilyn Henshaw, Counselor at Large. Did you ask Audrey to stand? We'd like to see her.
Is Audrey here? Her?
Not in her meeting.
Not in
well, here. Congratulations
oh,
anyway.
She's back there.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Marilyn.
Microphone number 4.
Molly Raphael, President-elect, and just a question, Kent, do you have the actual vote of the Supreme Court on this issue?
It was 7-2.
Okay. Great.
So it was a pretty resounding victory.
Microphone number 7.
Pinnell Stevens, Counselor at Large. I want to encourage everybody to go to Carolyn Forsman's exhibit, where she has such wonderful items as my ring for sale. So if you are scrambling to bring home tchotchkes for your staff or your family, this is a great place to look, and part of the proceeds go to the foundation. She is in booth 1859 across from the Gaming and Graphic Novels Pavilion, and the exhibits are open until 2 o'clock today. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one at the microphone, I thank you, Kent.
Thank you.
All right, we're doing well with our schedule, and so I'd like to recommend and have your approval for a 15-minute break. Okay, we will return at, we are at quarter after, is that correct? 20 after, we'll return at 10. Okay, microphone number 3.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large, if you have one of the petitions that has been going around, will you please get it to me?
Okay, so we'll return at 10:35. Thank you very much. Okay, it's 10:35 or perhaps even a little bit beyond. Please take your seats. We are back in back in session from our break. Please take your seats. I would like to clarify where we are going to go tomorrow with the discussion on council effectiveness so that we're all clear on how we will tackle that. Very dense document with lots of recommendations and a number of action items. Let me deal with this first. Okay, this is how we're going to do it. We are going to go through the document recommendation by recommendation, and you will have an opportunity to discuss the recommendations. The three action items that are included in the document will occur, the discussion on those, and any action if we decide to move forward with action on those items will occur after the discussion on the recommendations. So we will methodically address everything that is within that document. Secondly, just want to remind you that to vote for the Planning and Budget Assembly and the Committee on Committees, do we have the ballot box here? We do indeed. So just a gentle reminder. And now microphone number four.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large, and this is a thing of a personal privilege. I would like to thank Keith Michael Fields for enabling all of you to have a look at the one-page document, which is titled Global Public Inclusive Infrastructure and Public Libraries. This is something that is causing a big buzz in the ASCLA community dealing with disabilities and the Accessibility Assembly. They are extremely excited about this. It was introduced at the Washington Update on Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. I dragged myself out of bed to hear it. Basically, this whole idea will make it easier for individuals with disabilities and libraries of all kinds to be able to get service and provide service. The idea is, and this is a five-year project that is currently only going partially into beta this summer, that the individual with disability, whatever it is, will have a password and create a wizard which will have the information about the applications and hardware they need. This will all be on the cloud. And people like Microsoft and other companies, the Canadian National Institution for the Blind and so on, are all working on this. The American government has already put in $10 million. The Canadian and European Union are on board. So, mega project. But this whole idea is you can sit down, if you're an individual with disabilities, at your public library, computer monitor, and just type in your password, and boom, up comes whatever you need, whether it's closed captioning for the deaf or JAWS and Zoom text to make the text bigger for the individual with visual impairments. And on the other hand, if it works as they want and gives legal standing in terms of it being legally okay under the ADA and Section 508 for libraries who are cooperating in this, then it makes it a lot easier for our public, academic, etc. libraries to be compliant with the law and accessible for all different kinds of disabilities at almost zero to very low cost, because the basic services would be freeware on the cloud, and the individuals with disabilities can go to the libraries or kiosks or wherever and get the access. So this is hallelujah for the disabilities community, and we just say bring it on, and we hope this works.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Okay, you also should have a copy of the checklist that we discussed yesterday for communities that are considering privatization of public libraries. and information about an upcoming report on privatization of libraries, which will be published through ALA editions. We will now move forward with our agenda. And the chair directs you to ALA Council Document Number 41.1 and calls upon Councillor Michael Porter and Linda Crowe. Is Linda Crowe here? Co-chairs of the ALA Presidential Task Force on Equitable Access to present the task force's report.
Greetings, Council. Again, I'm Michael Porter, who along with Linda Crowe serve as co-chair for the Presidential Task Force on Equitable Access to Electronic Content. Again, if you don't have that document, 41.1, there are extra copies over there. The document is a summary of our activities, recommendations, and some feedback and supplementary information as well. To start, I'd like to say that on behalf of the 21 task force members, and even more folks than that, dozens of folks literally from council, from general membership, who have generously and wisely submitted very, very useful feedback to what we've been able to accomplish and help direct us towards what we still need to accomplish as an organization. So I'm here representing all of those folks, and I think Council and ALA at large is indebted to all of their thoughtful hard work. I'd also, just as an example of that, like to point you to pages 10 and 11, where you can see a timeline of our activities that gives you a nice context for what we've done. Now, when it comes to what we've been working on, when it comes to those duties, it seemed that perhaps it would be better to have you look at this document and highlight just a couple basic things that summarize a couple areas that need five actually specific areas that we all came together and realized needed extra attention from ALA. One is an environmental scan. So we want to look at the environment that inhabits libraries and electronic content access and how we all fit together with that. And those sorts of environmental scans are often done by corporations, and they require research and careful writing. That helps us understand who the players are, what their roles are, how libraries fit into that, and also can point to paths forward. So we recommend that there be environmental scans and activities around environmental scan. We also recognize that licensing needs a lot of expertise and focus and energy and thought. And also we believe that there need to be public relations activities related to libraries and electronic content access issues so that in the coming years and decades, everyone knows that they need to be able to get electronic content access through the library. Accessibility was also an issue that got focus. And there are many suggestions on how ALA can move forward with that, integrating existing work and making sure that as electronic content becomes even more of what we offer to the public through our libraries, that accessibility is a key area that's addressed going forward from the beginning. And then another area where the task force recognized that it would be wise to take action is with model projects. It's a time of great change, and there is a lot of experimentation. And so encouraging that thoughtfully and being able to report on that thoughtfully is a useful thing that we can do as an organization. So I just wanted to point out those are five areas of focus that the group came up with. In addition to the areas of focus and the work that we've done and you see on the timeline, I wanted to point out that one of the strongest recommendations that everyone on the task force agreed about was that this issue, electronic content access in the future of libraries, equitable access to electronic content through libraries, it needs a home in ALA. It needs a place where there are subject matter experts, that is organized, that's clearly connected to the different people and divisions. The fact that the task force is wisely includes a large number of people. It's necessary to do that, and that shows the complexity and the sort of care and action that it takes. So that is definitely one of the recommendations of the task force, that we have a home in ALA, and if you look at the larger document, the report, you'll see more specifics on those. I'm going to ask and encourage all of you to please look at that. In relation to finding a permanent home within ALA for issues around electronic content access, I'd just like to emphasize that the concept we're really talking about here is that this is a priority for the organization. Electronic content access in the future of libraries is a priority for ALA. Council recognizes that, the task force recognizes that, and that's a position that the task force brings to you in this report. Also, after a lot of discussion, not just with task force members, we've worked very closely with the ebook task force. If you go to the equac.equacc.ala.org, you'll see we have a blog, and many of the posts on the blog are from the ebook task force members. And so this is an example of how we are and need to continue working together within the membership, though also within the organization and the staff as well. So we recognize that to make this a priority in the organization requires resources. And we also, after talking with all of these folks and getting input, recognize that times are very tight for everyone and for ALA. While recognizing that, if we're going to make this an ALA priority, the task force sees that a redistribution of existing resources may be the most viable solution at this time. Also, one last thing to point out before we get to action items is that the task force goes through annual, and many members, all of the members, I think, are willing, but many of the members are ready to step up and continue to work on an advisory capacity as we move forward with the recommendations in the report to transition the work that was a presidential task force into a more permanent home within ALA that's more organized and has some teeth behind it. So we'll continue to serve if we ask to do so to help make sure that gets set up. And this portion of the work doesn't necessarily require additional resources at this time. So with that, I would like to point to page 2. The task force is recommending that council move on 2 items, and we've accepted the report, but then the 2 items are item number 2 and item number 3.
Excuse me, we have received the report, and let's move on to the next 2 items.
May I read them then? Is that okay? So the 2 items are that the task force recommends that council move on are we refer this report to BARC, the executive board and executive director, to develop a plan to implement report recommendations, and we request that the president and the board establish an ongoing group to address current and future issues of equitable access to digital content on a coordinated association-wide basis.
We have a motion before you. Is there any discussion? Microphone number 6.
Jim Neal, ALA Treasurer, member of the Executive Board. Michael, am I to understand that in the item 2 that you're recommending, you are withdrawing the specific financial recommendations which are embodied in the report?
The wisdom of BARC and those involved with financial decisions is what I believe the task force would defer to. Those are recommendations and suggestions that we think would be, we hope would be feasible.
So the task force is recommending the $200,000 and the $50,000 and the additional expenses, that is what BARC should be looking at. That is the recommendation of the task force.
Yes, and if you read the detail, that is a significant resource. That $200,000 that you mentioned is to have what the task force recommends is that there be a project coordinator within ALA to be a subject matter expert, coordinate with membership, council, executive board, and staff, and that be at least a 2-year position, and that person work to help coordinate these efforts. And that's the largest expended budget item recommended by the task force.
Thank you.
Microphone number 4.
Good morning, Alexia Hudson, Pennsylvania Chapter Counselor. I want to thank the task force for their work thus far. I am standing here to make a statement in terms of the recommendations regarding the task force. I was very surprised to read in this report, as I looked at the committee's composition, that there was no representation from the diversity or ethnic caucuses. That is of concern to me. It's unfortunate. I feel that I have to stand on this floor and make this statement. Furthermore, I would also like to recommend that as we're looking at establishing this ongoing group, that there be some additional consideration taken to ensure that the chapter council representation is a little more broad to concern or to address concerns regarding regionality.
Thank you. Microphone number 7.
June Pinnell Stevens, Counselor at Large. In those same lines, I see no representation at all from any of the intellectual freedom community, nothing from the office, nothing from the roundtable, nothing from any recognized leaders in the IAF community. Also, I see no statement of referral or interest in the interpretation to the Library Bill of Rights, the access to electronic materials and digital resources. And I am astounded at the lack of these rather important resources in this process. Thank you.
Microphone number four.
John Mormon, IFRT counselor. To extend Jean's remarks, at our roundtable meeting this morning, our roundtable expressed deep concern that there was no mention of the issue of privacy in the digital age. This is something that is a vital concern to the association as a whole, and we would hope that as this process continues, that this difficulty be corrected.
Microphone number seven.
Joseph Egan, member of the executive board. I think that I'm honestly confused by the process here. Are we going to be taking a vote on item number one and item number two? And when we take a vote on item number one, are we then, as council, giving this document over to BARC, the executive director, and the executive board to go ahead and implement it with no further role for council or our roundtables or our divisions? I'm confused.
May I give a general response
yes.
to a couple
yes,
of these
you
points?
May.
We agree that there are things that need more attention and need to be addressed, particularly in relation to diversity. Here's a great example of why this work needs to continue and be organized within LA and have some resources allocated to it. We put a call out, and the task force is deeply grateful. Roberta M. Claire, and Camilla O'Leary, they put feelers out and got us 10 days ago two fabulous, fabulous documents that detail how to incorporate issues of diversity. And when I present about this, I have a slide. I took pictures of our retreat and of our meetings, and then I show the same slide with the word diversity under it because it's not diverse in some ways that it needs to be. So this is clearly recognized by the task force, and I apologize for not mentioning that right off the bat and having anyone feel like they needed to step to the microphone. I would say the intellectual freedom issue has come up and been mentioned and recognized that needs to be included, and I think all of us agree with these issues and feel very passionately about them. I would also say both of these points are very good and typify why this needs a home and more focus and time and resources to make sure that this incredibly important, complicated issue gives respect and attention to these sorts of things sufficiently.
Microphone number three.
Rosario Garza, Counselor at Large. I am bothered by item number one because basically it is saying that we are going to be sending this report to BARC, the executive board, to go ahead and develop a plan. We're directing them to do so. And I don't think that we are at that stage yet. So I'd like to have some rewording of that happen to maybe recommend or to propose. I'm not sure what the appropriate verb would be, but I don't think develop is the right one, because at that point it does look to me like we're saying go forth and move this to become reality.
Microphone number four.
Elizabeth Ridler, Counselor at Large. I agree with that. We need some wording in there to allow it to come back to council at midwinter. Basically, with BARC having looked at things, put dollars to it. On the other hand, I would like to thank very much the authors of this report for their care that they took to include the entire area of access for individuals with disabilities. That section of the report is beautifully and clearly written, and I think answers some of the concerns that we had. And I also think it's going to be a lot easier, as I earlier mentioned with the GPII, for corrections to take place in access at libraries at a much lower cost, which, you know, removes some of the barriers. So procedurally, I think referring the report needs a little bit more wording, but factually within the report, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Microphone number 7.
Steve Butzel, Chapter Counselor for New Hampshire. I just want to say that I acknowledge there are weaknesses, there are needs for improvement. But when it comes to an issue of this urgency, in my opinion, we need to be nimble, agile, and quick. And for those who attended Council Forum, there was a strong agreement in the room that, yes, in moving forward with this type of position, we need to bring in more of ALA, more representation, more diversity. But at the same time, we can't take this as a huge, slow-moving ship. The idea was that this is an issue of such essential importance in all areas of librarianship that if we wait 6 months to hear back from BARC and then perhaps another 6 months before we're ready to actually take an action, where do you think the ebook and these issues are going to be? And our members are looking to us to show some leadership and to be agile. You know, quite frankly, if BARC needs to meet more than twice a year, I imagine maybe they already do, and I admit my ignorance, then maybe they should. You know, maybe BARC needs to meet about this tonight and get back to us tomorrow. That may not be entirely realistic completely, I understand. But I just want to convey with some passion that I feel this is an extremely important issue. I thank you for the work you did. This report was emailed to us well before today, so it's not as if this should be blindsiding anybody. So I really appreciate those who came to the forum, specifically those who worked on this this group. Thank you.
Microphone number 5.
Mario Gonzalez, Counselor at Large and Chair of BARC. We did receive the report before conference, and we accepted it. However, we received it in a very small time frame before conference. We do meet more than twice a year. We actually meet at least 4 times a year face-to-face, and we have numerous conference calls throughout the year to discuss the financial business of the association, as well as meeting with the executive board and finance and audit. In my report at the information session, I mentioned that we received 5 reports for taking a look at in terms of financial implications, and they range from very minimal implications to very considerable implications. This report has considerable financial implications, and we really need to take a look at this very closely. I want to remind that if Council does refer this to BARC, then we would take a look at that conscientiously in terms of what it would cost to implement this report, but that would be entirely up to you to do that. Thank you.
Microphone number 6.
Christopher Bowen, Counselor at Large. I want to second Jonathan's comments about how important this is to the library community and how important it is that we move quickly on this. As a public library administrator, I have become very expert at saying no to things that are going to cost money. But I do think this is something that ALA needs to really try to figure out a way to say yes to. This is very important. Lots of people are waiting to see what ALA will do about this, and I think this is an opportunity to show our membership that we can act and address an issue in at least a relatively timely fashion. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Microphone number 7.
Michael Goldrick, Counselor at Large. I think one of the things, I agree with this, the sentiment that we need to move forward. One of the other things that I think some folks have lost track of is the fact that the task force ends with this conference. We can't ask, unless we pass something else or unless the president appoints a new group, the task force is done at this conference. And that's part of what worries me, because I think we need to keep doing the work. And That's what I understand the motions that the task force is bringing forward to us this morning. That's why I support them, because I do think it's important work. We do need to move forward. This doesn't say actually we have to spend the money. It says to develop a plan. It doesn't say go spend the money. It says develop a plan. So thank you, and I would encourage you to vote in favor of both of these items.
All right. I would like to interject at this point that we agree with the sense of urgency about dealing with this issue. And we have, in fact, been moving forward with contacts with the divisions, and we will move forward to ensure broad inclusiveness beyond where we have been at this point. Keith, I would ask you if you would get up and speak, since this will occur past my presidency.
I need to express my agreement with the urgency of the situation and the need to move forward. A number of the components that are outlined in the plan are already underway. Funds have been allocated for the Office of Information Technology Policy to work with an economist to begin working on the licensing study, which is outlined in the proposal. We have begun and are talking about how we can develop the environmental scan, because that clearly needs to be developed. People want to know what's going on, what's the environment look like, what are the basic pieces in this environment. My understanding is we did speak with the divisions yesterday morning and had an extensive discussion about this. A piece that's not addressed in the report that I think is urgently needed is a set of principles. Because when HarperCollins says, oh, we're going to have an ebook disappear after 26 circulations, we may be upset about it. Are we upset about it because it's expensive? Are we upset about it because it doesn't provide for permanence? Are we upset about it because it doesn't provide for preservation? I do think that without a fundamental set of principles for the role of libraries in a digital world, that in fact we are rudderless, and I think that's one of the aspects that's not addressed in the study that needs to be addressed very quickly. The OITP ebook task force has been working on that. It has been a slower process, but we need to start circulating some principles for discussion as early as possible. The notion of a new group, I do understand at this point, and I will speak for Molly and Roberta, that is their intention, Molly's intention, and I speak on behalf of her just based on a conversation we had this morning, that this group will be in place by September 1st.
Microphone number three.
Christine Lindhage, PLA counselor, and also a member of the OITP ebook task force. I agree that this is a hot topic, obviously, within the association and the profession, and that I appreciate that BARC will be taking a look at it. But I want to remind everyone that ALA is a membership organization, and that we have membership committees such as the ebook task force and EQUAC as well, that volunteers can do a lot of this work. It doesn't necessarily mean that a specific staff person needs to be hired or appointed to form a whole new office or something like this. That I'm glad to hear that you're going to have a committee appointed this fall or to start work. And the ebook task force is still working on this issue. So the reference of referring it to BARC does not necessarily delay the important work that EQUAC has identified that needs to be done. But we can do it with volunteer members. A lot of this work without necessarily having a hired staff person do the work. This is an opportunity for the association to respond to the membership and to also provide opportunity for our membership to learn and develop their own skills in these important areas by doing that volunteer work.
Before going to microphone number four, I want to reinforce what Christine said, and that really is the thrust of our discussions that we have begun, and we will move forward on very quickly. This will occur with Molly as president. We began with the divisions, but we want to reach out very broadly and involve members across the organization, across the divisions, roundtables, our affiliates, to have a broad conversation as we explore some of the important recommendations that we see in the report with regard to the environmental scan, into which we have added the principles, but we and the models. Those are three key areas that we want to proceed with very, very quickly and far more broadly than we have really been able to do with the task force itself. Microphone number four.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. Just 2 points. I think factually it would be a very good idea if the members of the current task force are included in this new group that's going to be appointed, with more membership obviously out, because we don't want to lose the expertise or the thrust of their work. And in addition, I think at least a staff person, for example, who is tasked with responsibility in this area is extremely important. I was at the ASCLA Legislative Committee yesterday, and I heard a report from Emily Sheketoff on Washington activities. There's a lot of stuff in this report which may require either legislative action or action with lobbyists, vendors, and so on, that it is important that there be a staff person, not necessarily a new staff person, but certainly a staff person identified who the volunteers can go to and who will keep the ball rolling forward. Thank you.
Understood and agreed. Microphone number two.
Paula Bremheger, Counselor at Large. I just want to thank Michael and the task force for all their work, and to the other counselors who spoke earlier about the need for urgency on this. And my thought is that if you've been on the exhibit floor, even this conference, you can see that this whole issue is moving at light speed. So my issue is that the second recommendation really doesn't have a time frame attached to it, and I wondered if Michael might be able to speak to, you know, since it's such an evolving issue, when you would like to see this happen. Midwinter to me seems like an eternity, so I don't know if the task force might give a little of their input on that.
We just want to reiterate, as Keith mentioned, September 1st we will have this in place. We understand the urgency. We wholeheartedly agree. Microphone number seven. Number seven.
Joseph Egan, member of the executive board. But back to item number one. Again, I'm still confused. We're going to refer the report to BARC, and I've been a member of BARC. So typically then BARC would look at the fiscal implications and how that fits into our budget. Now, at this point in our FY12 budget year, they don't have an opportunity to then come back to council to say that we want to change the budget around. So how would that occur? And what would then be the role of the board in terms of those budgetary issues?
Do you want to speak to that, Keith?
The one thing I think that, to clarify, it's not approval of the budget, it's existence of the money. Okay, and that is, those are two separate considerations. So I don't want to suggest that this is a bureaucratic issue. It's a genuine resource issue. And so as a result, one of the things that we would look at, so that if you look at the recommendations in the report, the recommendations, starting with the resource requirements and then talking about what they're supposed to do. What we need to look at is what they're supposed to do, and then look at whether there are alternative means or there are ways in which we can begin the work and keep it going at a full speed if, in fact, we do not have access to the full resources as recommended. In some areas, we may have the capacity to provide additional resources beyond the resources that are required. So the goal would be to take the complexities of the ways and means issues and the budget, and again, I'm speaking on behalf of Mario, and certainly if he wants to correct or clarify any of this, and look at how we can do as much of this, the content and the intent of this report, that would involve both reallocation of existing resources, as Christine Lindhag has suggested, and the possibility of where new resources may be available, of directing them. So what we would do is develop the best possible implementation plan within the resources that can be made available as an association priority.
Microphone number two.
That's me. Hi, Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large. For some reason, I thought I was in microphone eight. Yeah. I just wanted to point out that there is a number in there, and it assumes a new position, perhaps. I look at money kind of differently, like a lot of things. But to me, I saw the number as 2 years of one full-time staff equivalent. It's new assignments, possibly for existing staff. So we may not actually be talking about outlaying $200,000 for a staff person for 2 years. We may be saying we need to reassign some time of an existing staff member, which means they're not going to be doing something they do now that we find important. So we're kind of looking at a prioritization issue, which is more important. I've lost a percentage in my head I had a little while ago, but everyone says this is an urgent, we need to move fast. Perhaps it's a temporary assignment, you never know. So don't let the money stop you, and don't let the money have you vote against it. Refer it to BARC, because BARC will probably come up and say, well, we don't have to really spend new money, we're already going to spend this money and just reassign the time, and that would be up to Keith to assign it to the different pieces parts of the association. So the financial implication is a financial implication, but it's not necessarily new money. And to the diversity issue, I fully support the idea of pulling in everybody that we possibly can from every single constituency, but the perfect is the enemy of the good. We need to accept that everyone has in mind that we want to pull everybody in, but we can't get everybody, so we're going to pull representative people that can speak to multiple groups at the same time. So I would really like to see and encourage you guys to vote for this and to see it happen swiftly and quickly and agilely. Thank you.
Microphone number five.
Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large. I heard last night a sense of urgency. I'm hearing here a sense of urgency, and I'm feeling a sense of urgency myself over this whole issue. I understand why council would want to see an implementation plan and be involved in its approval. But we don't have to wait until January to do that. We have the ability in our bylaws to vote electronically. So if we could get a plan, an implementation plan, by mid-September, we could vote on it in mid-September and move forward. And I think that would be a great test of our ability to work virtually and to make important decisions virtually.
Microphone number two.
Peter Hepburn, GLBTRT counselor. Michael, what coordination has there been between your task force and the Google Book Search Settlement Task Force? Because looking at the document that was sent to us, I think it's Council Document 49, that task force is also recommending the establishment of an ongoing group within ALA. It seems to me dealing with very similar interests and content, and I'm wondering if council is going to be put in a position of voting to establish two different but related bodies, or if you both are pointing to the same one. If you could comment on that, please.
Peter, can I clarify, did you say Google Book or eBook?
No, I said the Google Book Search Settlement Task Force.
Okay, because it appeared separately on the screen. It was a different, there was different text on the screen. You said Google
I might book. Have said eBook, but I did mean Google. Yes, thank you.
The recommendation of this task force is that it be a priority of the organization to take action on this, so that resources be allocated. Part of why it's forwarded to BARC is so they can decide how to do that with their wisdom and the input of everyone here that needs to have input into that process. Part of why we believe as a task force it needs a home and resource allocation is exactly so that work is not duplicated and is made more efficient and has a home within the organization where there's a subject matter expert that knows the players. We have not worked with the Google Settlement Task Force. We have worked a lot with the eBook Task Force. And again, I would say this recommendation from this task force is that this be given a priority and a home, and we've tried to set a process to do that. And I think, Peter, your point is very good, and to the task force's mind, I would believe, drives home the, again, the idea that there should be, in the task force's opinion, at least one full-time person who coordinates all this and makes sure it's efficient and effective.
Microphone number 7.
Mario Gonzalez, Counselor at Large and Chair of BARC. Our executive director was totally correct in his statement, so the Chair of BARC agrees, but I want to clarify number one, because BARC is not at all responsible in developing a plan to implement. That is the work of the council, and that is the work of the executive board. We report back to you, and we make recommendations to you. We make recommendations to the executive board. So we will not be at all involved in developing a plan of implementation. We will, however, should you decide to implement the task force recommendations, take a look at the cost and how we can find the money to do so, if there is a way of finding that money or not. And then we come back and report to you on that.
Microphone number 4.
Molly Raphael, president-elect, and the one who will be moving this forward. So let me say, first of all, obviously this is a very useful discussion, and it's being recorded. So even though I have taken extensive notes, I have the opportunity to really go back and review. Let me tell you what I've heard and how I see a pathway moving forward, particularly with what Keith and Roberta and I had already discussed about this before today. So I think we all understand that this needs a permanent home, and it needs to be association-wide. And the way we get that is through a committee of the association or a committee of council. That just as we have with important issues like intellectual freedom and other areas. So that is easy for us to do. We can do it in an expedited process. The second thing I hear is the membership of this committee needs to have representation from different areas, some of which are well represented on the task force now, some of which are not. And what we will do is take a look at how do we do that. And I actually see that I could be appointing members to this committee that would say, you're specifically being asked to be on this task force to bring these perspectives to the table so that what I think, as I listen to this, is where I don't think we want to go is have a committee so big that it never gets any work done. So we need to look at what's the right size committee for us to have, and then make sure that representation, when we ask people to be on it, they understand that they're bringing certain perspectives, and they're expected to represent those perspectives in the discussions and moving the work forward. In terms of the recommendations that are here, obviously this would be where this committee would start. BARC can be doing its work. The committee could also be beginning to look at how to do this, what's the most urgent. There is so much discussion around this going on within the membership that I don't think there's any doubt that it will move forward. I just want to assure you that we can take it and move it quickly, and I see the yellow lights on, and I don't want to get the red light, so I'll sit down.
Thank you. Microphone number 4.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. And again, being a nuts and bolts person, I recommend that we not try and micromanage the details. From what the incoming president has said, and what the chair of BARC has said, and what our current president has said, and Keith Michael Fields, I think they have a very good grasp of where this should be going. It represents many of the things that are actually in the report. And I think we should vote on it and then get out of their way to start the work. I am sure there will be some things like principles coming back to council at midwinter if it's a policy decision. at which point we put our 2 cents worth in again. Thank you.
Microphone number two.
Gina Persicini, Idaho chapter counselor. And I want to thank all of those who have recognized the urgency, particularly ALA staff and executive board. I think I'm asking for clarification because I heard two things. I heard that a committee will be appointed. We could probably get that established by September. And then I heard a comment that we might have principals in September. As though I think I'm looking for confirmation that it's the establishment of the committee in September, and then I would beg you and just say that's too late. We're dealing with this every day, and I know that we can only move as fast as an organization and humans are allowed to move. But we're talking with vendors every day who are trying to dictate to whom we can loan our electronic resources to. They want to know who our patrons are, and we're not willing to give them that kind of control. And they want to tell us how many items we should be purchasing, and they want to tell us how long they should be circulated for. And there are a lot of issues that we're dealing with now, and the sooner we have those principles, the sooner the libraries I work with will be able to provide this service to their customers, because the customers are screaming for it. So it's sort of double urgency on my part, and some clarification on when we would see principles would be fabulous. Thank you.
I'm going to respond and also ask Keith if he would like to respond to amplify on what I say. And Molly, with your indulgence, our intention is to move very fast, immediately after this conference. The timing of the principals is going to occur under Molly's aegis as president, but I can assure you this is going to be very fast-paced, and we want to be sure we are involving membership in a broad way in this particular area because of the key importance to all of us of making sure that we are getting our organized voice out there on these issues. Keith was talking about the fact that he has already moved forward to put in place work and funding on the economic model. So we are keenly aware, and we are going to move forward fast. Molly, am I misrepresenting this at all? She says I am not. Keith, would you like to add anything?
The principles. I would tend to agree. Those of you who are familiar with the Principles for a Networked World, how many of you are familiar with that document? That was a document that was prepared, I would believe that was, might have been 10 years ago, and it represented a sort of a similar kind of watershed in the association. Those principles did come to council and had to be approved by council. I think that the notion that a set of fundamental principles that we can use to portray to content creators and content curators and content vendors that will be sufficiently well thought out and incorporate all of the constituencies that we've talked about cannot be produced within a couple of weeks. It can't be done. So what my thinking has been that we could basically say we're going to get principles back to council at midwinter. In the meantime, there would be nothing that would preclude us from circulating draft principles, which we could then begin to use immediately with vendors. My understanding is, and I just say vendors, but I mean content creators and providers and other people that are involved in this dialogue, that the e-book task force has done some work that already has us part of the way there. That work is not widely known because it's been circulating in draft form. And I'm not intimately aware of that, but I do believe that we can begin to have, materials circulating during the summer or very, very early on in the fall that we can begin to use, we can discuss, so that by the time we get to midwinter, we would be in a position to be able to formally, as an association, adopt those principles. This is my thinking and what we would set as our benchmarks going into this.
Microphone number four.
John Mormon, IFRT counselor. In my role as chair of the Policy Monitoring Committee, I bring back to you the memory of Janet Swan Hill, who would look at number one and say that really, as mentioned before, does not follow policy. I would like to see that it, number one, be changed to refer the report to BARC and request the executive board and executive director to develop a plan to implement report recommendations. This brings us more in line with policy of the association.
Excuse me, I want to be clear. You proposing the amendment that we see on the screen?
No.
No, okay. Courtney, I'm going to go to the next, number five.
Courtney Young, member of the executive board. I would like to move that item one of CD 41.1 be revised to refer the report to BARC for review for fiscal implications and to the executive board to develop a plan to implement report recommendations. The results of BARC's and the executive board's work will be shared with the council by August 1st, 2011. And it's seconded by Alexia Hudson, the Pennsylvania Library Council.
Okay, I'm going to ask for a small change by the staff, Lois and the staff. I think we want to develop a plan. Okay. Is there any objection to the amendment? You have a seconder?
Alexia Hutton.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Okay, is there any objection? Any discussion on the amendment? There's no objection, so we're just going to... Is there any discussion? Is there any discussion on the amendment?
Okay. My responsibility is to give you the facts that you need to make decisions. We are at this point anticipating, just to put this in context, that there is a potential that because of the fact that because the recession is continuing to impact ALA, we're not sure how we're going to end up the end of the fiscal year. If you're in fact talking about some significant additional resources, we will not. There is no way that we can be in a position to know, first of all, whether or not our 12 budget is even going to be able to stand as it currently exists, or whether we're talking about further necessity for expense reductions going into 12. So I guess what I'm saying is that if you're looking at whether or not there will be sufficient funding to establish a new position, that decision, we're not going to have that information until October. It's beyond our control because these are whether the advertising market is plus or minus 2%, which relates to ALA revenues, won't be known until very early in the fall. So just so that you know that on August 1st, there are certain decisions that can't be made because there's essential resource information relating to the coming year that won't be available. So just, again, we can get something back by August 1st, but that plan will be fleshed out over the course of the fall as BARC gets together and we look at what the prospects are for the coming year. If it's a priority, depending on those prospects, that'll determine to some degree the amount of resources we could make available, just to be straightforward.
We are speaking to the amendment now. Microphone number five.
Mario Gonzalez, Councilor at Large, Chair of BARC. We will meet as needed to get this back to you on August 1st, but I think that Keith just trumped what I was going to say. Our budget year doesn't end until the end of August, so we will know for our final fiscal figures won't be available till October. However, BARC can meet, and we will get results back to you for the information that we have in July.
Microphone number two.
Aaron Dobbs, Councilor at Large. Yeah, microphone two. Okay. If August is not a good date, could you suggest a better date? The executive board meeting in October? I mean, can you offer any kind of picture at all, Keith?
We're comfortable with bringing something back to council on August 1st.
Okay.
As long as there's an understanding that that thing might say, we'll have some additional information in a couple more months as to whether additional resources.
Yeah.
Microphone number 5.
Tom Wilding, Councillor at Large. I'm supporting this revision. I teach management. I teach planning. Plans are always flexible. Plans are always based on contingencies. A plan only says this is how we're going to do this, and we all know that resources may not be there and that plans may have to change, timelines may have to change. But the fact is, you got a plan, and that's what's important.
Microphone number 6.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large. I'd like to call the question on this.
We need to take a vote. You are speaking to the amendment, correct, Elizabeth? So you're calling the amendment. Okay. Then we will take a vote on calling the question on the amendment. On the amendment, I understand. Okay, so all those in favor of ending the discussion on the amendment, raise your hand. All of those opposed, it passes. We will now vote on the amendment, the amended motion as it appears on the screen. Amendment that appears on the screen. I did that yesterday too. Okay, all those in favor? No. Hold on. Is there any discussion? Further discussion? No discussion? I know. Got it. Okay. All those in favor of the amendment? Thank you. Christine, go ahead.
Do we have to record our mark our ballots on?
Not on a
previous,
when we call a motion.
Not, no? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We are voting. That's what I was trying to say.
Okay. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. Okay. The amendment passes. Mark your ballot. CD number 41.1, item 1, revised. We will now return to the amended main motion. It's coming up on the screen. Is there any further discussion on the amended main motion? Okay, so I'd like to see it come back up on the screen before we proceed to a vote. Okay, you see it on the screen. All those in favor of the motion as it appears on the screen for CD number 41.1, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. We thank you. Okay, thank you. Thank you for your patience, and we thank Michael and the task force for their work on the equitable access to electronic content. We will now take up new business. These items will be discussed in the order in which they were submitted. I now refer to you ALA Council Document Number 50-50.1, Resolution on Revised Guidelines for the ALA Intern Program, in which Teresa Bigelow, Chair of the ALA Orientation, Training, and Leadership Development Committee, please go to the microphone and read only the resolve clause of the council document. Why is there?
Resolve that the American Library Association adopt the revised ALA intern program guidelines proposed by the Training, Orientation, and Leadership Development Committee.
Would you like to speak to the motion, Teresa?
Basically, this resolution or motion and the revised guidelines will bring the internship program within the bylaws of ALA. The interns are appointed by the official appointing person, the president, and in the past, the original version of the guidelines, it was up to committee chairs whether they could vote or not, when actually the bylines state that people officially appointed do have voting rights. So this will clarify it, and the other changes in the guidelines just clarify some languages and changes that happened from the original to some changes that have evolved over the years since the interim program was started.
Is there any discussion? Please, if you have a question, please go to the microphone.
Nancy
microphone
Zimmerman.
Number six.
Nancy Zimmerman, counselor at large.
Speak into the microphone.
Okay. Well, I was trying to talk to Teresa, so Teresa, excuse my back.
No problem.
It says on which committees can have interns that the committee chair and the ALA staff liaison inform the ALA president whether they want an intern or not. It seems to me if the committee chairs don't get to decide if they can vote or not, why should they get to decide them if they have them or not? And it seems to me to complicate the whole appointment process. If it's an ALA committee, why shouldn't the ALA committees have interns, and that shouldn't be an individual committee chair who made decision when the committee chair may change in the middle of an intern's appointment, particularly if they're rotated? So that didn't seem to make sense to me, that if we were changing their, that they couldn't decide whether they could vote or not, that they shouldn't decide whether they had them. Either ALA committees have them or they don't have them.
I'm afraid I can't answer that question. This is an inherited issue, and perhaps Courtney or someone who has been an intern can answer it. It doesn't seem that split to me. And quite truthfully, in the spirit of the honesty that I always seem to fall into, the most recent reason for you all receiving these resolutions that there was that dichotomy and conflict is the excuse I'm using now so you will move this along, because the TOLE committee did tell me they don't want this issue referred back to them. And I promised them that given any kind of trouble at all, considering the fact that I avoided speaking for council through 7 years of being a counselor except once, I promised them faithfully I would say that. So it's now officially recorded and I'm in deep doo-doo, right? And, you know, if you want me to research the answer, I can. Or if Laurel can answer it, that would be great. Or anybody else that wishes to field it. Or you want to change that little sentence.
So microphone number six.
I guess I need a point of clarification. The resolution is that they adopt this set of guidelines, correct? So can I make can I move to change the guidelines to eliminate that sentence?
Yes, you can. You can make an amendment to the resolution.
Yeah. Michael?
Yeah, put it in writing.
Okay.
Okay, microphone numbers. Are you moving forward with putting it in writing, Nancy?
Well, I was going to wait.
Okay, microphone number seven.
Michael Goldrick, counselor at large, former chair of the membership committee, when we did have responsibility for the interns, and I served on that committee for a number of years. And it just was, when the intern program was originally created, it was a way to try to get folks who are new to the association hooked into the committee structure. And it was we tried it as a very flexible kind of program, which is kind of why some committees have interns and some don't. Yes, it's true for all committees, because the president each year appoints a committee chair. Now, that person may, as I did, come to the committee as the chair in their very first year. There are other committee chairs who have been serving on the committee, sometimes for quite some time, and then become the chair. The same thing is true with interns. Most committees have two interns, so each year they get a new intern, so there's the senior intern and the junior intern. There are a couple of committees, and I don't remember which ones anymore, which don't have interns. And I can't tell you why. It's just, you should pardon the expression, and I hate when I get this answer at work, that's the way it always has been.
I would like to make a comment, if I may, having appointed committee chairs and members of the committees and interns. These are two-year appointments. It's not feasible with a committee chair appointment being a year-long appointment to be making a decision every year unless you're deciding that you're not going to appoint the second intern. You understand what I mean? You've already got one there for a two-year term. Issues, the appointment of the interns. Okay, where are we? Microphone number two.
Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large. Just hit up the TOLD website and the guidelines that exist now. The committee chairs aren't mentioned in here as having a choice whether or not they have interns, just to clarify that piece. And it says also here that the intern should participate fully in the work of the committee to which he or she is appointed. And then it comes around and says the committee will decide the voting status. I think this is just clearing out the whole, the committee will decide whether or not the intern gets to get heard. And I would urge you to vote for this or adopt this, because this will clarify where the interns sit. The interns then get to be involved as a committee member for all that they're actually an intern and not a committee member, which I'll leave that alone for now. But this is a great way for someone who's never served on an ALA committee to get it done. That's where I started. Perhaps some people regret that they started me. but it's the fabulous introduction to the committee structure, and without that program, I would not have the answers to the questions that I'm asked, and I really appreciate your indulgence in passing this. Thank you.
Microphone number seven. Are you just standing at the microphone? Okay. Microphone number six.
I wasn't opposing the clarification at all. In fact, I'm trying to further clarify it, because having made appointments myself, it seems to me to needlessly complicate a process and doesn't seem to make any sense if what we're trying to do is actually clarify that they are a part of the committee. So.
Microphone number three.
Barbara Miller, Counselor at Large. I just wanted to clarify something that's not said in the guidelines. When this was first brought up a couple of councils ago, when we were discussing problems with the intern program, several people brought up the fact that there have been interns who, in fact, had served on several committees, some who have been in charge of committees or chairs of committees, who were now put on totally different committees as interns, and which was in violation, technically, of the rules. And since this is not mentioned now, so is this a statement reaffirming the fact that these people should no longer be appointed as interns?
Microphone number seven.
The answer is, if they had served in a capacity before, it was most likely a division or roundtable. This is ALA-wide. It's an ALA. It's only the issue only covers ALA committees. So someone could have been, for example, if I hadn't ended up as head of TOLD, I might have been able to be an intern, which would have been novel and fun, and I'm now regretting that I didn't get to do it. I am telling you that traditionally the only two committees that have not had interns are BARC and accreditation. And always have Laurel have your back, by the way.
Okay, thank you.
And I just want to clarify, we're talking about council and ALA committees.
Yes, that's correct.
Microphone number four.
Sue Kam, Councillor at Large, just a point of order, a point of information. Would speakers please identify themselves when they come to the microphones?
Thank you, Sue. Microphone number four.
Nick Buron, YALSA counselor. I'm now confused. So I was an intern on an ALA committee, publishing. It was a great opportunity, and I was shocked when I received that I was an intern after spending a couple of years as a committee member within a division, and even a committee chair in a division. And when I was asked, I'm hardly an intern, I was told, well, you never served on an ALA committee. And I respected that, and I thought, okay, great, I'll take this internship. And I did find that it was a great opportunity, and I really did learn about the greater ALA. This says that, from how I read this, and please yell at me, you guys are more than happy to do that. This says that that would not be the case anymore. Am I reading that correctly? That we are talking about someone who is a recent member or someone who has paid their dues for years and has not participated in any way. So my gut feeling is that this is actually a real change in this program. And I guess I'm not to the point of voting against this, but I just would like to throw out, is this something that we're really talking about, that the people who would be interns would have absolutely no experience at all, having served on any committee in any way for any ALA unit or division or roundtable? Thank you.
Microphone number two.
Alexia Hudson, Pennsylvania Chapter Counselor, former member of TOL. I spent 4 years on the TOL committee working on this particular piece, and I will share the sentiments that Teresa's outlined is that the committee would really like to see this move forward. One of the things that we heard repeatedly over the years that I was on TOL from a variety of different entities of ALA and council committees is that they viewed the intern program as almost like a farm system in baseball. This was an opportunity for individuals who may be interested in ultimately becoming leaders at the ALA level to be able to examine how committee structure works. And so the intention behind the guidelines is to ensure that there is further clarification relative to the role of the intern so that there is consistency across ALA council and ALA committees. So I just wanted to provide that point of clarification as having served on the committee for 4 consecutive years.
Thank you. Thank you. Microphone number 5.
Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large. And this is to respond to Nick, because I think we're reading the sentence differently. And it's perhaps a fault of the sentence, not of the fault of Nick. you're welcome. But it's open to any ALA member who has never held an appointment or elected office within the American Library Association. And I think that's referring to the big ALA organization. Or an elected office within any unit of the association. So committee membership in a unit, or even committee chair in a unit, is an appointed thing, not an elected thing. So it's only if you have not had an elected office in a division or unit that would preclude your being an intern on an ALA committee. At least that's the way I'm reading this.
Microphone number 4.
Elizabeth Pridler, Counselor at Large. I am very, very pleased to see that internship is a one-time go. I don't think that members should be continuously in the farm system. Appointed successfully as interns to different committees, and I also think that members should fish or cut bait. Once they've interned, they should have the training that they can move on to being a full-time member and allow other members to have an opportunity to serve as an intern. Because what we're trying to do is bring fresh blood into the committees. And it's a vital part of our organization. We have to keep recruiting people with fresh viewpoints and ideas, with diversity, with different age groups, with different interests, to keep the organization alive and not keep recycling the same people. Thank you.
Microphone number 5.
Stephanie Braunstein, Louisiana counselor. Might I suggest that part of the problem here to me is when I read the sentence, the intern program is open to any ALA member who has never held an appointment or elected office within the American Library Association. That's, to me, the hierarchy of the situation is that that covers everything. And maybe the clarification is missing between that and the sentence that's next to it. I think the American Library Association is the body that all other task force and other organizations within the association fall.
I'm hesitant to, you know, to interject a comment at this point. It's really the role of the committee, and I don't want to end up misrepresenting the situation. I understand that this is very broad when you say the American Library Association, because people do understand that to include all of the divisions, roundtables, et cetera. Was the intention to say that the ALA or council and council committees?
The issue is that I think using the word big ALA describes it, that the whole program only covers big ALA. Divisions and roundtables in their own rights and prerogatives and whatever that piece of paper is that's brought up at division leadership regularly covers, it's in their prerogative to decide if they have an intern program or not. And this program only covers ALA committees and ALA council. Council committees. So if you think big ALA is what this is all about, and it does, it really, in trying to enrich the internship program, not having people who have been elected become interns is part of it. And the interesting reversal of it that I'll say quickly is that you never can tell when today's intern becomes tomorrow's president, Madam President.
Having been an intern. Okay, microphone number 6.
Hi. I think that we had a loose communication. I actually made, I thought I moved that in the paragraph on page 1 at the bottom that says which committees can have interns, then I moved that the sentence, the committee chair and the ALA staff liaison inform the ALA president elect whether or not they want interns appointed to the committee, be struck. So that paragraph would read, ALA committees are assigned up to 2 interns, each with alternating terms. The intern positions are considered additional membership slots on the committee. And I have a seconder, Erling Bishop Clean.
Okay, is there discussion on the amendment? Seeing no discussion on the amendment, we will move to a vote on the amendment. All those in favor, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. Okay. Thank you. I will maybe by tomorrow get this right. Mark your ballots for the amendment CD number 50.1, Intern Guidelines Amend. So we will return now to the amended motion. Is there any further discussion? Microphone number 2.
Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large. We had a whole lot of discussion about whether ALA, American Library Association, meant something or something else. Would it need to be written up as changing American Library Association to say ALA Council or ALA committees and council committees? Is that friendly enough that we don't have to write it up, or should I write that up and make it a second motion?
That needs, I think, to be written up.
Okay. Then I'm making that motion.
Preparing that amendment. Okay. Meanwhile, microphone number 5.
I think the action we just took, Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large. I think the action we just took now says that BARC and accreditation shall have interns. Is that not correct? It says ALA committees are assigned up to 2 interns, each with alternating terms, period. The intern positions are considered additional membership slots on the committee, period. It doesn't say
accept accreditation in BARC, it says all ALA committees are assigned to interns. Oh, I hadn't thought about zero being less than two. Never mind.
It's a Matthew. You know, all of us both folks, this is getting scary.
We're waiting for the amendment. Makes a difference. Thank you. Microphone number two.
Doc Roth, Councillor at Large. Just a question while we're waiting for the amendment. As a graduate of the Emerging Leaders Program, I just thought I'd toss out if there's any coordination between the intern program and the Emerging Leader Program.
I can speak. Are you asking me?
Whoever would like to respond.
I think I can respond, and Molly can also respond. Since we're waiting anyway, I will, and turn it over to Molly for her comments. There certainly is. When I was making committee appointments, I was endeavoring to appoint, as interns if they had had no private experience, anyone who was an emerging leader, spectrum scholar. If there was an indication of interest, they got appointed. That was my effort. So there definitely was a connection. Molly's going to respond as well.
Molly Raphael, President-elect. I totally agree with Roberta. I did the same thing. I will say that I actually have some intern positions that are still vacant because some people couldn't accept, and there were times when people didn't volunteer. So I actually reached out to places where I knew I had connections in library schools and other places where there were student chapters. But I think this is something that we can do a little clearing up in the volunteer form, because the volunteer form has a checkoff box. Are you interested in being a member, a chair, intern, and you can check any one of those three. So by putting intern there, I think we are sort of saying you could have served on another committee and we wouldn't know that. I mean, we may do that checking, but we're implying that somehow intern is one of the options that you can think about. The second issue is that I did, and I would imagine previous presidents, including current presidents as well as previous presidents, also any time I saw an intern who filled out a volunteer form and said, I'd like to be a full-fledged member of the committee, I would appoint that intern to a full-fledged member of the committee. Thank you.
Ditto. Microphone number two.
Yeah, thank you. I suppose I should have prefaced that by saying just a point of information. And pleased to hear that. My experience was quite different. I completed the Emerging Leader Program and was immediately swept up into things. Didn't even know about the intern program. But it sounds very good.
Okay. Are we ready?
No, may I make one more comment? Told has become aware of that, and what we're really going to be doing is promoting the internship program with the Spectrum Scholars and with the Emerging Leaders, because we think that is part of our leadership development aspect, that we need to bring the internship program up to the top of everyone's thinking as an alternative and a way to learn more about affectionately Big ALA, which can be a very complex and confusing organization. Those of you who probably jumped from being strangers on the street to council have already figured that out. And even after thousands of years in ALA, it still can be very confusing. So we're going to be working on that concept over the next few years.
I think the fact that there's confusion is evident today in this discussion. This is a tough one. Okay. Are we ready to go? Okay, we have an amendment. to the guidelines. Who can be appointed as an intern? The intern program is open to any ALA member who has never held an appointment, and the addition is to ALA or council committees. We have a second? Okay. Is there discussion? I think it's best for us to go ahead and go to a vote. Okay. So, if seeing no one at the microphone, all those in favor of the amendment, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes for the amendment. Mark your ballot, CD number 50.1, intern appointed. We can now return to the amended main motion and guidelines. Is there any further discussion? Seeing no one at the microphone, all those in favor of the amended main motion and guidelines, please raise one of your hands. Whew. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Please mark your ballot. CD number 50.1 as amended. Yay! We are coming in on the close of the meeting. We still have a little bit of time. Microphone number 4.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large, could we please ask that, as cleaned up, this piece of business, the intern appointment process, be made available tomorrow so we can see the complete document? I think it's worthwhile for members of council to have the clean document as we go forward. I think it's been a very useful discussion.
Lois Ann, can we have that tomorrow? She says yes. Okay. I now call upon Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to the ALA Council, for announcements.
Great. The only announcement I have is with regard to attendance, and that is that at the end of the day on Sunday, we did top 20,000 with 14,858 attendees and 5,202 vendors. Exhibitors.
Thank you. Please pass your signed voting record cards to the aisles for collection. Please make certain that your name appears on your card and note that cards without names will be voided. Be sure you sign those cards. And I want to also ask we have an announcement from microphone number 6.
Dora Ho, Councillor at Large. Just want to remind all the councillor, as the co-convener of the council forum, is going to be tonight at 8:30, also at the Marlborough Room at the Hilton Hotel, second floor. Thank you.
We have some additional announcements. Microphone number 7.
June Pinnell Stevens, Councillor at Large. I'd like to note that we are adjourning early after including a report from the Freedom to Read Foundation. Thank you.
There you go. Microphone number 7.
Ronald Russ, Arkansas Chapter Counselor. I just wanted to let people know that the Chapter Counselors Forum will be in room 245 at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Thank you.
Okay. Any further announcements? Executive Board members, please come to the front of the room at the conclusion of this meeting, and Council 2 is now adjourned. Thank you.